Hi folks, please don't hit that forward 30-second button, or maybe I've just told you that it's there. But nonetheless, we could really do with your support. The Tortoise Shack relies on listeners. It's purely down to you guys that keeps these mics on. We don't do ads. We don't do sponsors. We don't want to join any of the corporate podcast platforms that are controlled, shall I say. But we just want to lean into keeping our independence and keeping those voices free. And if that matters, then to you, please show that support by joining us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. You get lots of things for that. You don't have to listen to these, please. You get a one-stop shop for all the podcast content that we do, including today, which is going to be an insanely busy day. We're back covering the assembly elections in the north. We are covering how sex work is policed in Ireland. We have a new voice coming from Gaza to the Tortoise Shack. And on top of that, we are going back to talk about the Citizens Assembly on drugs. All of those will be available on the Patreon feed. That's patreon.com/tortoiseshack as quickly as I can get them turned around. If you don't have the few quid, we still appreciate you. We still think it's brilliant, but we would also ask you to maybe tell people, you know, let them know that you enjoy the podcast, what you get from them, and recommend us, because it's word of mouth that grows our audience and we rely on you. It's as simple as that. Thanks so much, and I'll let you listen to this podcast that I recorded the other evening with Rosemary Mann. It's a powerful, powerful 40-minute conversation. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and this is a podcast that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. And unfortunately, the guest has had to bear with me. I've been bad at getting things done and nailed down, because I tend to be, but I actually say to folks that I'm a one man band, because the other fella doesn't even know how. He thinks we record on tape or on VHS or something. So I have to do all the other stuff as well. But nonetheless, today is something that, again, as I said, I've been looking to speak to Rosemary Mann, I guess, who is a human rights campaigner, activist, mother, proud traveler, and Mayo woman for quite some time, because I've known her online. Listeners will recall when we were talking about our awards last year on the Tortoise Shack for activism and for the people who do the most. I think you were pretty much unanimous after a bit of a conversation where we discussed a few names, Rosemary. And the reason we said that is purely because I didn't know where you got your energy from. And I think we'll get to that now in the podcast when we go there. But before we get into that, it's almost a year since you wrote for the Irish Examiner about how children can be taught to hate rather than children taught to love, and how your community starts off by being, I'm going to use a real capitalism word, disenfranchised and put outside. In the last 13 months since you've written that article, have you seen any kind of change, any sort of movement, anything that to take a bit of hope from?
Well, first, I want to say thank you so much for having me on again. And thank you so much for thinking of me and giving me that award. Because I remember when I seen it online, I was so touched, because sometimes, you know, you feel like that you're shouting into this big tunnel and nobody's listening, nobody hears or values, I suppose, the efforts that you're putting in. And because it is online, it's a lot of emotional labor for activists, and other activists will understand that and they know how draining it can be. But I suppose in terms of the article, that was actually a good opportunity, I suppose, for a traveler, first of all, to have the opportunity to write and put your perspective forward in a national newspaper, because we don't see that a lot. We are starting to see it, which is great. Like, now we have the likes of Martin Bean's award, you know, who's absolutely flying it now.
Yeah.
Writing for lots of papers, and he has his own podcast, and he's doing an amazing thing.
And he has, and I believe he has a show coming that he's put into a documentary as well that he's working on.
About the old days, and I suppose looking back where we've come from and how things have changed and the impacts on the elders and the younger generations. But I suppose the message in that article is that, you know, I always say that as travellers, we have to be warriors from birth, simply just to survive life in Ireland. We have to prepare our children for racism. Because if we don't, they're going to come home like we did from school, crying to mommy and daddy. They call me the K word. Nobody wants to play with me. They're not inviting me to the parties. You know, it starts as children. Our trauma starts from maybe age 3, 4, 5, when you start to notice I've been treated differently. And when they're treating me differently, what they're saying is because I'm a traveler. And that's a very strong message to give to a child. That can be soul destroying, because we all can remember back to our childhood, whether we're traveler or not. And we know how, you know, it's important that you need to have a nurturing environment. You need to be encouraged. You need to be loved. You need to feel welcome and wanted. And that gives you the strength and the confidence to be who you are. Well, in a lot of cases, when traveler children leave the family setting, they don't get that. They get broken and they get hurt. And that's on a daily basis. And if you think about top of all that hurt and trauma, some traveler children then have to go home where they have no water, where they have no toilets, where they have no electricity, you know, or they might have one tap in a site that is serving 40 families. You know, you have young girls growing up when they start their period, they're going into a portaloo that's shared with 40 families. Like, these are the inhumane conditions that travelers are forced to live in. And, you know, I think it's important to note that we've always lived in these conditions. It didn't happen overnight. And, you know, this year is the 100th anniversary of our Irish Free State. And I always say it as a traveller, I feel I have nothing to celebrate in terms of the Irish Free State. Because if we look back of how once they were founded, you can look back through Dáil hearings and you can see the anti-traveller sentiment right from the get-go.
The Commission on Itinerancy in 1960 stated that there could be no final solution to the problems created by itinerants until they absorbed into the community. I just used that sentence, and I know I let it hang there for people, but it's just the idea of it just sends chills down my spine, Rosemary, and I'm not a member of the traveling community.
Of course, and we have to remember, like, that was in 1963, and that was a state official policy of assimilation and othering of Irish travellers, their own Irish brothers and sisters. You know, after we fought for our freedom as Irish people, after we said that the Republic was going to cherish all its children, we turned around, well, not we, non-travellers turned around and started to oppress Irish travellers. And when I was going to school, I never learned anything about that, the 1963 Commission and Report on Itinerancy. I learned that as a young traveller activist, and it really hurt when I read those words. And every time I say them, every time I read them, every time I hear them, like, that is Nazi sentiments. That is Nazi hate for me, Rosemary Mohan, because sometimes people think, oh, travellers, I don't know any. So somehow we're less human or subhuman. We don't matter as much as other Irish citizens. But you have to get to know us and see us as the humans that we are. Because if we do want a just Ireland for everybody, well, that includes travellers. That includes everybody. And I think it's important, you know, that if the state want to put that right and try to undo the trauma that it inflicted on Irish travellers, there needs to be, first of all, recognition of that assimilation policy and an apology to us as an Irish ethnic minority group. Because then we can start to heal some of the trauma, the intergenerational trauma that has been inflicted on us. We can start to heal that, maybe to have some, you know, closure and try to gain back of what was taken from us. Because if you think about it, we're a nomadic community. But if you look around the country, where are the stopping spaces for where we can pull in and pull out? Do you see travellers travelling around being nomadic anymore? No, you don't. Because we know the travel accommodation programmes, year after year, the travel accommodation budget is sent back. Recently, it has been spent, which is great, but it's not on new builds and it's not on transient accommodation. Like, in the task force of the travelling people in 1995, that recommended that, you know, our culture would be recognised and catered for. And that included nomadic provision, that there would be a network of transient sites all over the Republic of Ireland where travellers could actually be travellers. That hasn't happened. Instead, we will see that travellers, you know, over the generations, when they tried to be nomadic, that they were served with unlawful evictions, heavily policed at any time. You know, when I look back on, you know, the RT archives of travellers, it really breaks my heart. And again, it's just re-traumatising myself, looking at what happened, you know, to my ancestors, thinking about, you know, how my grandparents were given no other option only to go into a house and, you know, to try to become what non-travelers thought that if you put them in a house, well, then they won't be a traveler anymore. Well, that kind of backfired, because those who live in houses are, guess what? We're still travelers. We've held on to our cultural traditions and values, and our language can't, you know, and we've never been prouder as travelers as ever. You know, it's just that hope and the resilience and the strength. You know, and Mags Casey, you know, she always says we're a strong, dignified people, and we are. And that's why we're surviving generations of oppression and assimilation policies. Now, the policies, you know, over time, they changed. They became, I suppose, more positively written. You know, that, you know, traveler culture was going to be recognized and catered for in 2017. Finally, our ethnicity was formally recognized by the Irish state. You know, that took, but that took 30 long, hard years of traveler activists lobbying for something as simple as to give us the respect and recognition of who we are.
Yeah. You know, and no, I'm just reminded of the you mentioned the constitution saying, you know, cherish all the children of the state equally, but not you. And I remember someone seeing this awful image of, you know, the phrase on the Statue of Liberty, if you don't mind me, I think it's something like, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, but not you. You know, all of this kind of othering that we have, when you talk about it in the context of that, I can see, looking at your face, that this is hard, that you don't like having to talk about it. And one of the worst things for me is that you continually have to tell people, you know, our traveler men live 15 years shorter lives than members of the settled community. Traveler women live nearly, is it 11 and a half, 12 years?
11 and a half younger, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to keep repeating these things to get them into someone like my brain, you know, that it sits with me. But it also shows that there's a need for genuine, well, two things actually, genuine attitude of change towards how traveler accommodation is looked at, as you said, to in line with traveler culture, as in, you know, or if you recall, I think we did a podcast up with some of the guys in Ballymun, and when they first arrived on that site, they were put out of there to be out of sight, out of mind. But then, of course, over time, people moved out to Ballymun. And then he said, famously on the podcast, they wanted to build walls around us, but not roofs over our heads, you know, and they were left in, with the same things that they had. But just a wall was built so people going to IKEA to shop didn't have to see the traveler accommodation.
The travelers, exactly. Yeah. And that's nationwide, Tony, like, and just to touch on a point, you know, lots of people, you know, say to me online, oh, do you talk about anything else other than traveler racism? No, I don't, because we 11% of us are dying by suicide. Our men are dying 15 years younger and our women are dying 11.5 years younger. Only 1% of us reach third level education. And that's not finishing it. That's only actually reaching it, putting your foot in the door. 80% of us are unemployed. Now, of those stats, were of non-travellers. We wouldn't be talking about them for 30 years. There would be real urgent action, because non-traveller lives matter. Like, that's the message that's been sent to me as a traveller anyway, because, like, those stats, you know, I keep throwing them out because the general public don't know about them. You know, the ordinary person, you know, going to work 9 to 5 or whatever, busy with their own lives, they may have never heard about them. But the state have heard about them, and the organs of the state have heard about them, and they hear about them daily from travel organizations. But there is no accountability and there is no real action. You know, even at a European level, you know, the UN, the European Council of Human Rights are coming in, you know, saying Ireland's not doing enough. They're in breach of human rights legislation when it comes to Irish travelers. The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination are coming in saying the same thing. But when it comes to travellers, it seems that Ireland cannot be shamed. It doesn't matter, you know, what they do to travellers, because it has been happening for generations after generations, you know, of young little traveller children living without water, something as basic as water. And I think it has been allowed to continue because we don't have that same level of people power. Like if we look at the water charges, you know, people power changed that, turned it around, and rightly so. But I just wonder sometimes is some of those people actually realize when they were marching about, you know, they didn't want to pay for water. Did they think about poor traveler children that would live without water? You know, these are the stories that we need to get across. This is the reality that our society need to be aware of, because as you said, traveler Pacific accommodation have been pushed beside dumps and on floodplains with big walls around them, like a concentration camp where, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and the settled community don't have to worry about it. They don't have to see it, and they don't have to see the poor little innocent traveller children behind those walls with no play area, sharing a portaloo, you know, with 40 to 50 families in overcrowded conditions.
Sorry, Rosemary, I want to just say to listeners, this is not old. This is happening now. These are sites that we've seen horrendous reports about in the last number of months. Only it looks lovely and sunny outside right now, but it was bloody Baltic cold only a few months ago, and there were inhumane conditions in traveling sites, and you know, dependent on one pipe bringing water in and for sites. We've seen these, and again, people have made the journeys, filmed this, and I think you're right to point out that there is a failure of people power. Because too often people slip into the, you know, the tropes, the, oh, bad eggs, the, you know, all of this malfeasance is thrown at people. And when you talk to people and actually engage with the topic and you explain, well, if you are disenfranchised, if you are disempowered, if you are ruled out of society, if you're told that you have no place in society, you probably will seek solace in some sort of other thing, which happens, by the way, in all communities. It just happens that in more of a middle class community, if you're hiding your trauma in a bottle or in drugs, you may be able to hide it a bit better or get access services a bit better. But certainly, if we're not providing water, we're not providing mental health services where they're needed either. And all of those failings. Can I ask about that though? The exhaustion of having to continually tell that story, and then the frustration of being met with, "Why would you not talk about something else?"
Yeah, I'm laughing at now, but I just feel like, "Duh, why are you following me?"
Yeah,
when I started off my activism in 2004, and you know, you're younger and you're more energy, and you're starting off fresh as an activist, and you know, we're meeting all your role models of traveler activists that have come before you, and you're learning about all the movement. And I just thought this was so powerful and positive, and it was exactly where I wanted to be. And, you know, we were going to change things for not just for travelers, but for Irish society and make it a just country for everybody. And I remember thinking about, you know, for example, that the Traveler Accommodation Act in 1998. And I was like, geez, this is a great policy. You know, and I was so proud of the traveler activists that fought so long and hard for it and got it over the table. But then, as years went on, I started to notice, well, you know what? This is not actually being implemented. And I'm exposing myself to trauma going into meetings with officials from services who are anti-traveler, who are solely there to block traveler accommodation, you know, who are being racist towards me, asking me, why are you representing these people? You know, so as a traveler activist, it's not a 9-to-5 job. This is your life. This is your people who are dying on the side of the road. These are your young traveler men that are taking their own lives because they're not getting the respect and the value and the opportunities as other people. It's personal. And if somebody says something about travelers, well, you're saying that about me. And I'm human and I have feelings. I'm angry at the Irish state for what they have done to us as people. I'm angry at all of its organs. I'm angry at people for whatever reason are racist towards travellers without knowing us. I'm angry at people who have stood by and watched and let it happen. But I don't hate any of those people because I don't know them personally and I don't know their struggles as another human. And I work with those people every day. And lots of traveller activists work with those people every day. And we've become friends with some of those people, because not everybody in the state and not everybody in state organs are bad people. You know, it's a system that needs to be overhauled. And I think, you know, that's what the movement has done really, really well, is that we have built relationships amongst both communities, traveler and non-travelers, and we've become best friends and we've become colleagues. And we could, it's, you know, it's so beautiful if you could see that, that we have genuinely become friends within that, almost like a family, of trying to save traveler lives and trying to save Irish society. And I wish, you know, that wider society could see that relationship. And I think that's one of the reasons why I joined Twitter, is that in the movement, sometimes it feels like that you're working within a vacuum. You're working with the state and you're working with its organs and you're working with the settled people alongside you in the organizations. But your voice is not getting out, filtering into wider society. And that's where the people power is. That's who can hold the Irish state and its organs accountable. That's who can tell Irish traveler children, you're loved, you're cherished. This is your country too. And you can be whoever you want to be. That's the message that needs to be sent out, because when you're constantly reading over these stats, you know, that only 3% of us live past the age of 65, 11% of all our deaths are by suicide. Like, these should be shocking people into real urgent action, meaningful action that reverses those stats. You know, not just having empty promises while we're working day in and day out to make, you know, a meaningful change for our society. And I know in this area of work, change is slow, but it doesn't have to be this slow. And again, it comes down to people power, because if we look at the equality legislation, that was a great win for equality in Ireland. But again, people power, enough people cared. Repeal the 8th, people power, enough people cared. Traveller children living without water, there's not enough of people power. Do people care?
Can I put that? I know, you know, you kill me, but you know, I always go nerdy on the numbers to put that in context for people. So, for example, the traveling community population is about 1% of the Irish state, I believe. It's probably a little slightly more. So you're talking maybe 55,000-60,000 in one way. And you think that rightly so, we've moved mountains over the last 2 months for people fleeing war from Ukraine, of about 50% of the same equivalent of what can be done. If you can move mountains like that, and we should be doing this in all of these things, and you should not be telling your trauma, your people's stories, day in, day out, for decades. And that's the onus. That's why it's on people who are listening, not on you, Rosemary. It's on people like me to actually be better when it comes to pushing for these things. It's about contacting our TDs. It's about actually saying, well, we know what we'll do. We'll organize a human rights rally with something like this, because that's what you're really talking about here, is actually taking that energy that you have, which I admire greatly, and channeling it in a positive way. And I'm going to say something else for listeners' benefit, that I witnessed you on one of these during the pandemic, where yourself and Lilith were talking about uplifting one another in minority communities. Lilith is a member of the trans community. And it was a powerful moment where you both shared that experience of being marginalized and both uplifted. And I saw that solidarity, and it impacted me in such a way as to say to myself, going, Christ, why does it take that for me to get it? And there's an admission that I'm making. But it took that for me to get it, in a way, to see that. And, you know, and sometimes people aren't there to hear it. But it was, for me, it was the moment. So, but we do, you absolutely need people power, and you shouldn't have to keep telling those statistics over and over and over without the action. And more importantly, you're a mother as well. Your children shouldn't have to face that in their generations. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you said, was it yesterday, you know, do they want to be a doctor? Do they want to be...
Little Zoe here wants to be a doctor, and Rosa wants to be a teacher. Hmm. So, like, for me, you know, that is just so powerful, because they have, you know, they believe in themselves. They believe that, oh, just because mommy is a traveler doesn't mean that I can't be a doctor and I can't be a teacher. And this is what we need to be instilling into young traveler children. And traveler parents do that, but the power is not in our hands. when we send them into an education system, we have to remember the trauma as travelers, as students we experienced ourselves and our grandparents and our own parents. You know, our history and our culture and identity was never celebrated within the education system. It was never part of the curriculum. Thankfully, again, after a long, long battle with traveler activists pushing it, it is going to become part of the curriculum of the education system. And that is going to benefit every student, not just travelers. But in particular, you know, the discrimination that young traveler children face and the bullying, the low expectations from teachers, you know, teachers not asking you what you want to be when you grow up. And if you actually look under that tweet last night, you know, Megan Berry, a really inspirational young traveler woman who is, I think she's the access worker now in Maynooth. She's recently got her master's. Her teacher, when she was 12, she went around the class and asking all the students, you know, what do you want to be do when you grow up? And when she came to Megan, she didn't even let Megan talk. She said, oh, you'll be on the dole.
Wow.
That was so, so heartbreaking for a child to take in. And that can just smash any little ounce of confidence that you have left in you as a traveler child. You know, so you're treated like that in school, and then you see that none of your elders or relations have employment, or if they do have employment, they have to hide their traveler identity in order to pay PAYE. You know, you have to hide who you are as a human just to get on, you know, a pay slip. Like, people don't see this reality. You know, the wider society, you know, will think, well, travellers don't want to be educated. It's a lifestyle choice. All they want to do is criminal acts. You know, we're animal abusers. You know, and as traveller activists, we flip that all around, you know, because we have been, you know, oppressed and marginalised since the foundation of the Irish state. That has an impact. The stats that we're continuously saying, trying to get the message out to Irish society, are a result of the 1963 Commission on Itinerary Report, the othering, the assimilation policies, because that set the tone for the decades that followed. And that inflicted trauma on us as a people. And we all know what happens when people are traumatised. We're human. We're not robots. We can't just take oppression and think that it, you know, that it doesn't affect our mental health. Like, if you look at our mental health, 7 times higher suicide rates for traveler men, 6 times higher for traveler women. You know, 82% of us have been impacted by suicide, and 90% of the entire community will say mental health is an issue for us. Of course it is. We've been traumatized for generations. And the HSC and the Department of Health and the state are not taken seriously enough, because when the All-Ireland Traveller Health Study in 2010, you know, was commissioned and was reported, they had no recommendations within it. And we're still lobbying for a national traveller health strategy. I believe it's in draft form, but that length of time with those stats?
12 years from there, and during that period from 2008 to 2015, 16, I think, no budget was cut more during the period of commonly call austerity than the traveller one.
Yes, I wanted to bring that up because I've written it down, because in education it was cut by 86% and accommodation it was cut by 85%. And in the year up to 2008, now remember all our health stats, 82% of an available budget was not spent. Now that's the value that's put on traveller lives. And that's why we're frustrated. You know, we give it our all. We go in, we're respectful, we build relationships, you know, and we do it in a positive partnership approach of building relations, building that republic that was fought for. We don't have that republic, but travellers are trying to shape that republic for everybody. And I think, you know, that's why we're good allies to other marginalised communities, because we know the trauma. We live and breathe the trauma from birth. And I think it's powerful. And it's so beautiful to see that relationship between marginalized people. Like, there's no better feeling. It's like a kinship. You understand. You don't have to explain too much. You don't have to fight for the solidarity, because you already have it, because they're living the same nightmare.
Can I tell a little story to listeners who mightn't be aware, that we had a guest on the podcast who was in Berlin, who had fled the war in Ukraine, and all introduced via Rosemary here from, and Chikri is the Roma NGO that they were involved in the Ukraine, who ended up then getting in touch with me via another woman called Irina in Ukraine, who hadn't fled, who was doing some of the fundraising, who ended up being in touch with Don O'Leary from the Cork Life Center, who ended up being delivered electricity generators because of you reaching out and starting those things there. And that's how, you know, those things can, the power of those little conversations and that actual activism and showing solidarity with people. And so, you know, you can make a difference. You can make changes. You can get wins. We just need to get more people to start pushing that boulder with you.
Yeah, exactly. And like the thing is, like 2 years ago, I joined Twitter and that was my whole mission. And I didn't think that I'd have like over 16,000 followers. I'm still in a bit of shock about that. But, I thought, you know, I'd give it a go because the Traveller Voice is not filtering out people, you know, who genuinely care about us and who are our allies, but they're not quite sure of what they can do. And like, I'm just sometimes blown away about the kindness and love and the care that people give to me. I really appreciate that. You know, if people are listening in, I really do appreciate that. Because it does actually keep me there, because not everybody is nice on Twitter. You know that it can be a really, really, really nasty place. So when you do find your people on it, it makes it a whole lot easier and nicer place to be. But I think, you know, for people listening, if you are thinking, oh, well, Rosemary, you know, what can we do? The smallest act can lead to the biggest change, because if we're all making small acts, they have a knock-on effect. And I always say, you know, get to know your local travellers, the local traveller community. If you don't feel confident enough to reach out directly to travellers, because, again, you don't want to be invading their space, going into their home and you're a stranger, you know, make maybe the first contact as a local travel organisation, and then travellers working within those organisations will branch you out into the wider community. Find out what are the local issues. In terms of the political system locally, what TDs and councillors are anti-traveller. Look at their voting habits on traveller accommodation. And then you'll use your vote wisely if you're a traveller ally. Maybe if you have a business, you know, start off work experience or internships or apprenticeships for travellers. Because, again, 80% of us are unemployed. If that was the Irish settled community, there would be a task force set up overnight, and you can damn bet there'd be urgent attention and direction given into it. Look at the national policies, national organisations, what we're calling for. Hold your TDs and councillors accountable, the state accountable. If we're having protests, please do not leave us standing with the same old faces that we see at protests for decades. It's really, really, really heartbreaking. You know, you get used to it. And you talk to the people, you know, that your friends, your family, as I call it, the travel movement family, and you give it as best as you can at the protest. But it's just so tiring.
Yeah, I know. Because I mean, it's
like that message that nobody cares about us. You know, we're fighting our own battle.
And I've seen you at every housing march. You know, I was there with Bernard Sweeney behind the banner and having the laugh and getting the piss ripped out of me because I'm always clumsy when it comes to everything, you know, like, that's not even a big ask, folks. It's not a big ask. It's not.
And our next one is being organized through the National Traveller Mental Health Network. Again, you can follow them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, get to learn about their work, their solutions, because again, traveller led has their solutions, and there are travellers that are greatly impacted by the traveller health or the traveller mental health crisis, in particular the chairperson Mags Casey. I know you're hoping to interview her at some stage.
Indeed.
You know, he lost 29 members of our family to suicide. That's like, try to think about that. It's not one, it's 29. Like, as a family, how do you survive that level of tragedy and pain? So they're organising their protests to try to hold the state accountable for our mental health crisis, because they are accountable at the end of the day, because if they had invested and held, you know, the HSC, local authorities, other services that have failed travellers, if they were holding them accountable, then we wouldn't have this mental health crisis as a community. And that's a theme of the protest, is accountability. It's outside the Dáil, May the 31st, 12 until 2. everybody can make it, but if you can make it, please do. If you can't, email your TDs, your counsellors, educate your family, your friends.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Challenge all of those, all of those stereotypes. Challenge all of those crappy opinions that people have that they've just grown up with, and make sure you have those conversations. And it's sometimes it can be uncomfortable, but so what? You know, you just have to get yourself, your arse out of your comfort zone for a few seconds and challenge it, because that's where it starts as well for many people when they're going to have those conversations. They'll start maybe at dinner tables or over a pint in your local, but that's important as well, you know?
Yeah. It's important to challenge those, because if we look, more heartbreaking stats that really enrage me when I see them. And I don't like talking about traveller racism. I wish I didn't have to. It's draining and it's traumatizing every time I talk about it. And it's the same for every traveller, but we hide it well. We don't, you know, we're too busy trying to save other traveller lives to be thinking about, you know, I can't do this anymore, or I need a break. Because traveller children are living without water, you know, in a rich, developed country in 2022. If we look at the behavioral attitude survey of 2017, it's in 2017 in Ireland, it's not in 1922 or anything like that. But the stats that come back were, you know, 55% wouldn't have travellers as a community members, 35 avoid travellers, 75 wouldn't have a traveller as a co-worker, 83% wouldn't employ a traveller, and 91% said they didn't want travellers as part of their family, and 85% wouldn't want a traveller as a friend. So you have to try to imagine the hurt and the trauma just even reading those statistics, you know, even for a traveller activist that reads them every day. But we have to think about if a young traveller teenager has to read those, coupled alongside the real lived experience of being treated that way. You know, it's no wonder that 11% of all our deaths are by suicide. When society is telling you you're not good enough, we don't want you, you're not loved, you're not cherished, it's no wonder that we are carrying our young people to the grave. And it's these results and these stats, people can think, you know, they're just figures, but it's actually a mirror of what's happening to travellers in reality. It's not just figures, because behind these stats are your Irish brothers and sisters and their children. Like, try to put yourself into those shoes and have a little bit of empathy and try to feel what that must feel like, but you'll never be able to feel it.
No, but I want to try and end on a positive if we can, because what we've seen in some of the better moments of activism and collaboration and moving forward in recognizing that our struggle is a shared one for the Republic that you say we never actually achieved, that we left behind. There's an opportunity there for traveller culture to enrich wider Irish culture as opposed to be living outside it. And we've seen it now, maybe now more widespread, where people have gotten to the point where, you know, Eileen Flynn is speaking brilliantly in the Shannon. We see these things. And I don't want to talk about tokenism today. I want to focus just a little bit on the fact that this is a good thing, that she's doing brilliant work. Proud of her, actually. You know, text her the weekend and you know, and you're talking to people and you just see how that makes you feel. That's enriching our politics. It can enrich our culture, and it can enrich actually our life experience for all. So I think, you know, Rosemary, that's what I'd like to try and end on, that positive thing that we can do this. And above all else, yes, people power is what's required. True allyship. It's all good, you know, send a tweet, hit retweet, do what, and okay, that stuff can matter, but it won't matter as much as the TD getting an email, and it won't, and it'll scare the bejesus of him if you bump into him and you say it to him.
Exactly. And I think, you know, Senator Eileen Flynn is just such a positive turning point, not just for traveller history, but for Irish history in general. Like, she is doing Trojan work as a senator within our state at the moment. And it's so powerful and heartwarming just to watch as another traveller when you see Eileen in the Dáil and you're like, that's one of us, and look at the strength, the power, the compassion, the empathy, you know, the social justice coming out of everything that she says. And that's Traveller that's saying that, you know, and not just in the Dáil talking about Travellers, talking about all marginalized people. And coming across so strong for everybody and being a voice for the voiceless. And that's what the Dáil needs. The Dáil, like, if you look at it, it's not representative of Irish society one bit. It's privileged people, you know, in privileged positions being voted into a much more privileged position, you know, and built on the suffering of marginalized communities. And those marginalized communities don't even have the opportunity to be in the Dáil, you know, to bring the real heart of Ireland into the Dáil for social justice for everybody, for that just Ireland for everybody. And I'll go back to again, for the republic that we fought for as a nation, you know, that wasn't just for privileged people. That was for every Irish citizen, every child that lives on our island. And I think, you know, you mentioned about, you know, being allies and retweeting and liking a tweet. It's important. But you really hit the nail on the head. It doesn't hold the state accountable. It doesn't give Traveller children water. And it doesn't give young Traveller children the message that you were loved, you were respected, you're part of Ireland, a very important part of Ireland. Your history, your ancestors have enriched Irish music, you know, history and culture. And it doesn't give them the hope and the confidence that I can be a doctor or I can be a teacher. Those opportunities are there for me, or I can be a Taoiseach, I can be the president. You know, I think if we do get to a stage where we have an Irish Traveller as a Taoiseach, we've made it.
They tell you what, you know, you don't have to settle for anything, by the way. No one should have to settle for anything, but you know what is a good thing then? If you get to a stage where you can stop having to tell your story every few hours just to have people pay attention. That's we need to break that barrier, and people need to help you break that barrier. Rosemary Mullen, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And we will be covering the events on the 31st, probably around the 29th. So hopefully something lined up for then once everybody is available. Thanks for listening, folks. And you can follow Rosemary. The details will be on the podcast as it comes out. So you'll get her Twitter details there. But yeah, she's a force of nature, and I'm glad that she's my friend. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Tony.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.